Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parch III, and you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome for Sunbelt Media Day. That's right. All the teams that make up the Sunbelt Conference will be coming through these doors, answering all the important questions from members of the media. It's quiet right now. As they're still setting up, putting some finishing touches on things. But this room that I am in will be just chocked full with activity, questions, answers, hopefully good answers, hopefully good questions all day today. Reminder, we'll be broadcasting live right here from Sunbelt Media Day, 6 to 9. Then, later this afternoon, the good brother Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, will be broadcasting live this afternoon as well. And we got a ton of great stuff lined up for you today. We got interviews lined up on this show with head coach Billy Napier of the Raging Cajuns. We'll also have Dr. Brian Maggard, athletic director for UL, joining us. Both of those will be in the second hour. Third hour, we're going to close out strong with not one, not two, but three interviews with coaches throughout the Sun Belt Conference. We're going to be introduced to new Appalachian State head coach Elia Drinkwitz. We'll also be talking to South Alabama head coach Steve Campbell, and we'll close things out with Georgia Southern's new head coach Chad Lunsford. All those will be in the final hour of RP3 and Company. And Ben Love, the good brother, is going to be bringing you home as well. He's going to be talking with Billy Napier as well. He's also going to be talking to Chip Lindsey from Troy, Sunbelt Commissioner Keith Gill, ULM head coach Matt Viator, and then the UL contingent that was brought player-wise, Deuce Wallace and Jared Jackson. So you got to make sure to tune in all day right here on 103.7 The Game. And today's coverage from Sunbelt Media Day is brought to you in part by Pete's on Johnston. Guys, the time to book your all-inclusive fantasy football draft party is now. Go to PetesLafayette.com/fantasy to sign up now. We'll get to all things Sun Belt, hours number two, hours number three. It's going to be exclusively Sun Belt coverage. So let's go in and get the national stuff out of the way now here in hour number one. But before we do that, Cody Schutz back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Good morning to you, brother. How was your weekend?
Oh, my weekend was pretty fabulous, to be honest with you, man. Got a few things done around the house. Spent a little birthday time with the wife. Today is actually her birthday. Happy birthday, honey. I love you very much. So this weekend, we spent a little time, went to Topgolf on Saturday, Ray. So I'm so ready for our friend nice. Rob Spires to come in studio tomorrow. Chip Shots is going to be real fun because I have some complaints to make about the game of golf in general.
Not, your not, experience not really, at Topgolf
not
was,
really complaints. It just makes
was
me
amazing.
It just makes me mad that
your game
is in trouble.
It makes me
mad that Kaylee is apparently as good at golf as I am, having never played golf before in her life ever. Apparently, we're at the exact same skill level. So there's that I learned. But no, it was a great weekend. I'm excited about Sunbelt Media Days today. I like that between RP3 and Company and Bumper to Bumper Sports, it seems like you're getting every other coach or every other possibility there is throughout the Sunbelt. So between the two shows today that are live at Sunbelt Media Day, it'll be real fun. I'm looking forward to it. And plus, it's another day with you not in the studio, so there's that as well.
Oh, wow, so much to digest there.
How are you going to throw shade before the sun comes up? The sun's not even up yet. How are you going to do that?
Oh, man, it's still dark outside, my man. Dang. Well, I guess someone won't be getting a Sunbelt Media Guide brought back to them in the 237 Roof Studios. I guess you just talked your way out of that. Well, congratulations to your wife. Happy birthday, and I hope she enjoys it. But, Cody, let's get to it. You know what? I want to talk, I'll lead off today's show. Wasn't expecting to talk anything LSU related. And then apparently they decided that the Tigers decided to unveil their new state-of-the-art LSU football locker room. It's unlike anything else in the country. It's the newly renovated football operations facility, and it is state-of-the-art. It features custom manufactured open two-port lockers. The room combines state-of-the-art design with practical functionality, engineered with one goal in mind to provide all needs met, time-efficient. I'm just going to state here, the reaction from the LSU players, from Grant Delpit to Divinity to Kerry Vincent, who all, by the way, said, I'm staying all 4 years now, maybe even five or six, nobody's leaving. That was the reaction by the players to the new state-of-the-art facility there in Baton Rouge. This is the promotional video that LSU football put out. Cody's going to play a clip of this. Just the introduction about the new seating arrangements inside the locker room there at Tiger Stadium.
This $28 million renovation was really based around the athletes. It's to function the way that an athlete needs to function and to cater to those guys. It all kind of comes to a head right here in the locker room.
I think the locker room is a logical choice. We spend a lot of time here. Why, instead of having a sleeping room, which some people have, let's create their own pod. Let's create their own area that they can recover.
And so that was one of the key things, is how do we take something as functional as a locker and implement a functional sleeping space for each of the dedicated players?
Cody, they've built a locker room.
Oh, I've seen
where
it.
The players get their own pods. Like, they can take a nap.
Yeah, there are cup holders I see, and it's got the cushion on it with the tiger head, the old school ish tiger head logo on the back, and it looks like it kind of lays out like a beach chair. It is the best way I can think to describe it without any kind of visual. It's kind of like a beach chair to where, you know, from your hips up, you know, your torso up, you can kind of adjust that. Maybe that's kind of leaning at an angle a little bit, where then, you know, from the hips down, your legs and everything, those lay flat. But then right next to you is this like little covered area that looks like it has a cup holder and then a place to put your phone or something like that. I mean, me and my buddy were looking at this last night, and we were actually talking about it and saying, like, well, yeah, of course I want to play for LSU, but do I want to leave the locker room for LSU is the question. Do I actually want to get on the field? But this right here, I mean, this has got to be top five locker rooms in the country, and I'm going to put it out there.
State-of-the-art, designed by Kansas City-based firm HNTB. It has corner-to-corner, wall-to-wall line of sight. And that's something that they really wanted to have. No more separated box and lockers. So the old days of sitting inside your locker, you know, you're surrounded by, a lot of times, plywood in my case. And an old smelly locker room is just not, that's just not how it's being played anymore. This is state of the art. They got like the cushion air pods. It's sketched out. $28 million, Cody. For a locker room.
I believe there was
a locker room.
There was purple carpet I saw as well, which is really cool.
That alone costs $12 million. Just for now. it's open concept. It's wall-to-wall light. They got the AirPods.
Of course, everybody's locker is personally labeled. It's got your name, your number on it with your helmet and all that.
Yes, yes. All that good jazz. So, yes, it went over well. Probably the best locker room facility in the country. I have questions. I have questions. Not that the fact that LSU had the money to pay for this, because obviously they do. $28 million is nothing to them. But I have questions. Is this needed? Or is this simply a recruiting tool? Like, fundamentally speaking, is this locker room with the state-of-the-art cup holders and airbeds and line of sight and all that light, it looks amazing. Don't get me wrong. Okay, I'm not hating on that. Looks amazing. Looks phenomenal. Looks state-of-the-art. All those things that you're wanting it to be, it is, without question. My question is it needed? Is this going to make you a better football team? Or is this simply, I guess I just answered my own question, right, Cody? If it helps with recruiting, and recruits come and they're wow, and they're, you know, oh, wow, look at this. Look amazing how this locker room is. They sign on the dotted line. I guess that's what it's all done for, right?
I mean, yeah, and if I'm allowed to cite kind of a cliche coachism, if you will, you know, you look good, you feel good, you play good. And so, I mean, if that is the case, then this locker room is going to get the guys feeling and looking real good before the game. So look good, feel good, play good.
My next question is this, Cody, and look, and you and I, we were there for the spring game in attendance. I feel like if they're going to do this, can we have some AirPods as well as members of the media while we're in the press box? Can we set up a little location for us just to relax? You know, look, man, covering a football game can be stressful. Ooh, maybe get a massage. You know, have my cup holder.
Everybody has a personal stenographer where you just have to sit next to and be like Grant Delpit with the interception. Stop. Second quarter, first and 10 LSU ball. Stop.
This game is far too stressful. Can I have my own personal TV and watch a little HGTV? I need to know what Chip and Joanna Gaines are doing right now. Is that possible to make my life far more easy? Please, convenience. Yeah, so congratulations to LSU for having the most state-of-the-art locker room in the country. It is the heart of the newly renovated football operations facility there at LSU. So we'll see. Look, I mean, I see these kind of things, and this all stems from me, Cody. Oregon started laying out the template for this about 10 years ago, about a decade ago. There, it was all about the uniforms. It was about the locker room. It was about the facilities. It was all about the style and the presentation of the program, and that helped them become a winner. That helped them win games because they were able to nab recruits away from the likes of USC, Stanford, and other programs out on the West Coast, right? And Oregon was able to build a national brand. This feels very much like that. And this is the world we live in now with big-time college athletics, is you have to spend nearly $30 million building a state-of-the-art locker room because you're trying to appeal to kids today. Not the same kids that you were trying to get 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. That method of recruiting and presentation of your university and your athletic department that worked 30 years ago does not work now. So you have to appeal to them. And what's going to appeal best to them? Something slick, something high-tech, state-of-the-art. That's what the kids want these days, whether they're a 250-pound outside linebacker or if they are a 200-pound, 5'11" running back. State-of-the-art stuff like this goes a long way in recruiting.
And good on LSU if you've got the money to go ahead and spend it on something like this, because we know today, you know, kids going out of high school into college, especially these high-profile athletes that are going to go play LSU football, then it's going to be really hard to impress them. They're not just your average. It's not like bringing me in off the street and being like, come check this facility out. Like, no, if you're bringing in recruits for LSU football, they've already seen, most likely, the Alabama locker room. They've seen the Florida locker room. In some cases, they've seen the Ohio State and the USC's and the Michigan locker room. So if you've got the money, which LSU does, go ahead and spend it, because it's becoming harder and harder to impress these kids. So you kind of got to do what you got to do. It's just, it's either keep up or fall behind. And LSU is trying to keep up here, and I applaud that.
Brother, it's an arms race.
That's the word. Thank you. That's what I was trying
to
say.
It's an arms race.
Fallout Boy. It's an arms race.
We need to hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll talk a little golf. That's right. A surprising winner at the Open Championship there in Northern Ireland. We'll dive right in. Live from Sunbelt Media Days, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Broadcasting live from inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome for Sunbelt Media Day. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. That, ladies and gentlemen, who we just heard from, rather, was Shane Lowry. The Irishman, 32-year-old, won the Open Championship by 6 strokes. He navigated the blustery win, which is essentially trademarked by the Open Championship. Even took part of some a little bit of a downpour, but he took home the claret jug. He was phenomenal. Finally had his breakthrough. And the great thing about Lowry being the Open Championship winner, hoisting the claret jug, is the fact that it comes a year after a career low for him. He had a terrible opening round at Carnoustie, and Lowry admitted that he cried in his car in the midst of a crisis of confidence in his game and what he was going to be as a professional golfer. He said Sunday night, quote, "Golf wasn't my friend at that time. It was something that I had become very stressful, and it was weighing on me, and I just didn't like doing it anymore." But golf is fickle. It's a weird game. It can cause you immense amounts of frustration, and then on the same hand, it can cause you great joy. At Port Rush, an Irishman wins the claret jug. It took 68 years for the claret jug to return to Ireland. Lowry made sure to extend its stay. Shane Lowry. Tremendous performance. And look, the conditions were not great on Sunday. You saw a lot of over par scores. Lowry himself shot a one over. Tommy Fleetwood, who finished second, the Englishman, shot 3 over. Tony Finau was even par, even Brooks Koepka, 4-time major champion winner, went out there and shot a 3 over on Sunday, as did Lee Westwood, who shot 2 over. They finished tied for fourth. And yet, despite shooting 1 over par on the final round of a major championship, Lowry still won by 6 strokes. 6. He had a mediocre or below average of golf in a major on the final day and still won by 6 strokes. Even if Fleetwood would have shot even par, let's say Tommy Fleetwood would have shot even par, that would have put him at 12 under for the tournament. He was still lost by 3. That's how good Lowry was. Royal Port Rush had not hosted the Open in nearly 70 years. For Lowry, it's a breakthrough. first major championship. It's the 148th Open Championship. Six-shot win. And once again, leading into the Open Championship, there wasn't a lot of talk about Shane Lowry. And just not between myself and Rob Spires on last week's Chip Shots with Rob Spires. On from 9 to 10, every Tuesday. He just hadn't been in contention. He just hadn't been in the mix. A reminder, it is the first major championship for Shane Lowry. He's only 32, but he did burst onto the scene as a professional about a decade ago when he won the 2009 Irish Open as a 22-year-old amateur. And that's one of the two, the Irish Open and the Scottish Open are the two tournaments that lead up to the Open Championship traditionally. We talked about it a lot. A lot of Americans go over there to try to practice. And there he was a decade later. And Lowry wins the Claret Jug at Portrush, to, of course, a raucous ovation from the home crowd as they got to see an Irishman win the Open Championship. Just an amazing career. And it goes to show you once again, Lowry himself, after having a terrible round at Carnoustie last year, doubted his self, doubted being a professional golfer, doubted if this was what he needed to do with his life. And a year later, he's your Open champion. Think about that. Goes from the lowest of lows as a professional to the highest of highs. Amazing for the Irishman. We got to hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company. We'll talk a little Houston Astros baseball when we come back right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Houston Astros completed the sweep of the rival Texas Rangers yesterday with a 5-3 victory. Astros improved to 64-37 overall on the season. They had some struggles coming out of the All-Star break. If you remember, they went to Texas for a four-game series. They were the first game after the All-Star break. No one else played that Thursday but the Astros and the Rangers. They get roughed up those first two games, need extras in game number three, and then win game number four in convincing fashion to get a split. But then they turn around on the road in Los Angeles versus the Angels, and they do the same thing. They drop the first two games of that four-game set. Have to fight, scrap their way back, just get a split. So they open up the All-Star break with back-to-back splits against teams that are just a little above average. The Rangers are now one game above 500. The Angels are roughly around the same. But then the Astros go out there, and they take care of business by getting the sweep of the rival Rangers. Look at the box score. Across the board, dominance. Altuve, 2-for-4. Bregman, 1-for-3, drew another walk. Michael Brantley was an absolute monster yesterday with the multiple home runs. He went 3-for-3 with 2 runs scoring, 3 ribbies. Alvarez, the young phenom out of Cuba, 2-for-4. Gurriel, 1-for-4. Then it was the pitching. Armenteros started the game, 5 innings pitched, only gave up 2 hits, 1 earned run, struck out 6. And then the bullpen did its job. Josh James pitched 2/3 inning. Gave up 1 run, but was able to stop the bleeding. Colin McHugh came in, really has found his role coming out of the bullpen. Inning in the third, clean baseball. 2 strikeouts. Will Harris, the former LSU star, inning of work. Only 2 hits, 2 strikeouts. And then Osuna comes in for the inning. 1 hit, 1 earned run. 64th win. They hang on to the win. Brantley, once again, proves to be another tremendous, shrewd front office decision by the Astros. Remember, he'd had a bit of an injury history in his almost decade career with the Cleveland Indians. They let him walk. The Stros were able to get him really kind of on the cheap, 2-year deal. And he's been absolutely phenomenal. All-star game starter for them. And he's just been lighting it up. Brantley gets the 2 home runs. 5 Astros pitchers combine for 13 Ks. And they get the 3-game sweep over the rival Rangers. This time there at Minute Maid Park. It was the 6th multi-home run game of Brantley's 10-year big league career. And he started things off with a 2-run blast in the first and then capped it with an even farther, higher solo shot there in the 8th inning. That solo shot gave the Astros a little bit of insurance, which they ended up kind of needing. Houston struck out 12 times, though, against Rangers starter Lance Lynn, who just 11 days ago struck out 11 Astros hitter in Arlington. So he's kind of got the Stros number a little bit. Brantley's 2-run home run and Jose Altuve's solo home run in the 5th were the extent of the damage that they could muster. Making his first big league start, Armenteros managed 5 frames of 1-run ball. He yielded only the 2 hits. But he did struggle a little bit with the consistency for the command, in particular of his fastball. He did struggle a little bit. I mean, the Rangers were able to push him to 61 pitches through the first 3 innings. So early on, you're like, oh, this guy's throwing a ton of pitches. But then he retired the final 8 batters he faced, 5 with strikeouts. Cody, we do this from time to time. Producer extraordinaire, back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's a game we like to play when we talk Houston Astros. Would you like to break it out on this Monday morning, sir?
Of course I would. I think we used to do it on Wednesdays, but I think it's recently transitioned here to Mondays. But nevertheless, it is time for everyone's favorite Houston Astros, I guess I'll call it, little trivia game here. It's how many games in first place are the Houston Astros? Ray, I will give you this. Of course, the Astros are in first place. We know that. They are in being trailed in second place by the Oakland Athletics. If it makes you feel any better, the sweep there of the Rangers dropped Tejas behind the Angels as well. So Texas now in second to last place in the AL West. But go ahead, take your guess at how many games in first place are the Houston Astros.
Well, see, they had messed around for the first 2 series, but now to getting the sweep of Texas, but Texas has fallen down to nearly the bottom of the division.
The Rangers are now only 1 game above 500.
My guess, Cody Schutz, on this Monday morning, how many games in first place are the Houston Astros? I'm going to say 5 games.
Okay, good. I was really glad you didn't get it right. You got it exactly right the last 2 times we played this game in a row. No, you're a little wrong. You gave the Astros a little less credit than they deserve. The Stros, Houston, in first place by 6.5 games. They have a 6.5 game lead. On
6.5.
That is correct.
Wow, that's impressive. That's impressive.
I mean, I believe last week when we checked, it was a 4.5 game lead. So they gained themselves a 2 game cushion over the last week or so.
So in the driver's seat, to say the least, moving forward, they have now a cushion. The rival Rangers are fading to the bottom of the division. We already know how the Seattle Mariners, the early April champions, as they were anointed, are faring as well. So I guess the biggest threat in the American League West, Cody, is going to be the Oakland Athletics, correct?
It is, and I saw a headline the other day. I don't remember exactly what website it was on, but it was a spot-on headline that said, the Oakland Athletics are good, and they shouldn't be. It was one of those things. It seems like it's this team that shouldn't be good, but here they are. They're hanging around again. They're doing their thing, and it looks like similarly to the NL West, it seems like there's one team that is far and above more talented than the rest, that being in the NL West, the Dodgers. They're a million games in first place. When you flip it over to the AL West, it kind of feels the same way to me, that the Astros are just have uber more talent than every other team in the division. But for some reason, there's that one Oakland Athletics team that instead of being double-digit games behind like every other team in the division, they want to just hang out there at 6.5 and not really be too threatening immediately, but still want to be within striking distance. And am I nervous for the Stros? No. I would be lying if I said I'm worried for them as of yet. But, man, oh, man, it would be nice to see Oakland hanging out down here with L.A. and the rest of the teams at 12 and 13 games behind, you know?
It's always the team that you don't expect, right? And Oakland's done a terrific job of that under Billy Beane with producing these rosters that you look at and you go, really? And you look at it and you're like, do you even have a single all-star? Is there any juice to this team? And yet they find a way with the way they run their front office, their scouting, and everything that they do and their development, that they always find a way to be pesky. That's how I always viewed this Oakland A's. These Oakland A's teams, they're never going to overpower you. They're not going to intimidate you. They're just like a pest, right? They're just constantly buzzing around, annoying you. That's the type of team that can get dangerous come postseason time, Cody. And they've proven that over and over again. Now, Oakland's never been able to make a run to the World Series with this kind of method of how to run their front office, which, of course, was captured in the best-selling book, Moneyball, and then with the movie featuring Brad Pitt, which was also a huge hit. But they're a pesky team, and Oakland probably will not fade. I know what you're saying, though. You're like, I'd really like them to kind of fade back. I don't see that. The fact that they're surging now is just kind of what Oakland does. But that's their biggest threat. But I see Oakland as a wild card team, not a legit threat to come after the Stros. Still think Houston's going to be making a move. Still think that move is going to be coming before the trade deadline. They're going to get another veteran arm. Once again, you know, look, they gave a guy his first career start yesterday in the third game of a series against a rival. You're not going to be able to do that. They got Verlander, who's a contender for the American League Cy Young Award. They got Gerrit Cole, who's an underrated player, three-time All-Star now. And Wade Miley, the former Southeastern Lion, has done a tremendous job. He's a reliable number three. But as of right now, they don't have a four. Peacock is banged up. Other guys they've had to send back down to the minors. So where do they go from here? They need another arm. It's what they need. They need to get themselves another veteran arm. And weeks ago, we were talking about, well, maybe they make a splash and try to go after someone like Madison Bumgarner. I don't see that happening because now the Giants are all of a sudden winning, and they appear to be going from sellers to possibly buyers, as they could be in the mix for the National League wild card. So I doubt they trade their ace, the three-time World Series champion Madison Bumgarner, who likes to spend his time, Cody, out in the wilderness in his log cabin and chopping down trees.
Bear Grylls style.
Doing other... Yes. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Will they make a splash as much as they did back in 2017 where they were able to scoop up for barely anything Justin Verlander? Probably not. The market out there right now, starting pitchers, it just doesn't lend itself to a big-name former Cy Young Award winner being on the block like that, being on the trading block. But I would expect them to make at least a move to help bolster that rotation. So
we shall see
if they can do that.
I've got a question for you before we hit this break here, Ray, since we played our Houston Astros game. I would like to go ahead and throw it at you, too, a couple of more divisions here. We already know the NL West, the Dodgers are, if you want to know specifically, there are 16 games in first place. So that division's all but over there in the NL West. But let's take a start with your team's division, the Atlanta Braves. Do you know off the top of your head, or maybe you've been following a little more closely now, how many games in first place are the Braves? Second place team in that division is the Washington Nationals.
Now, I know they just beat up on the Nationals over the weekend, which always makes me happy. It would make me more happy if it was against the Phillies.
Right.
I'd say right now the Bravos, Nationals are the second team in the division, not the Phillies?
Not the Nationals have a one-game lead on the Phillies. The Phillies are in third place.
Wow. Wow. What, Bryce Harper's turning things around. yeah, pay him $500 million. Yeah, let me know how that works out, being third place. I'd say the lead for my Bravos, led by Acuña Jr., he's so good, such a good young player, is 6.5 games.
Spot on, my friend. It is indeed 6.5 games. They are 6.5 games in first place. My Cubbies, 2-game lead over the Brewers, 2.5-game lead over the Cardinals. So a tight, tight race there in the NL Central.
Nice, nice. We got to hit a break, but when we come back, we'll keep the baseball talk going because Baseball Hall of Fame, that's right, was over the weekend. Some latest inductees there into Cooperstown, including a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. We'll talk more about it right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day. We're going to close out hour number one here, talking a little Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. The latest group entered Cooperstown over the weekend. Headline, of course, by Mo Mariano Rivera, the most dominant clutch closer of all time. He was your headliner of this year's class. He was joined by Mike Mussina, Edgar Martinez, the late Roy Halladay, Harold Baines, and Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Louisiana native Lee Smith, former Chicago Cubs pitcher, relief pitcher, one of the best to ever do it. Interesting class if you want, if you look at it. I mean, obviously Mo, the most dominant closer, kind of changed the game. There'd been very good, great even, closers before Mo. Dennis Eckersley, who was a starter that became a reliever. Others as well. Lee Smith, who was put in on the what we used to call the Veterans Committee. Now it's called the Today's Game Era Committee. They split up the vet committee into multiple different committees with specific time periods, and they're all part of a rotation of who can go in, who they vote in, instead of the old format that the Vets Committee would just pick from a large pool and say, hey, these are the guys that we're going to put in this year or putting up. Instead of doing that, they split up the Vets Committee a couple of years ago. So Today's Game Era Committee put in Lee Smith, well-deserving Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, originally from Jamestown, Louisiana. He gets in. So you look at this, Lee Smith, reliever. Mariano Rivera, reliever. Mike Mussina was a starting pitcher. But then you got two DH. It's two relievers and two designated hitters got into the Hall of Fame this year. Harold Baines spent the majority of his career. He was also put in by the Today's Game Era Committee. Longtime DH. Edgar Martinez, DH. So the stigma, I mean, you would never, even 10 years ago, definitely 20 years ago, be talking about the Baseball Hall of Fame and go, you know, this year's class, we're going to put in two relievers and two guys who were DH. Never would have happened. There was a stigma about the designated hitter. There's a stigma about relief pitchers. The times have changed. The game has changed. The game has evolved rapidly. Now we see the importance of dominant closers. We've seen the importance of relief pitchers. Hell, starters don't even go that far anymore. Sometimes they don't even get out of the fifth inning on purpose. Not because they pitched poorly, just because many of managers are looking at it in a different light. They're looking at it as, we're going to reduce the number of pitches, and then we're going to turn it over to our middle relievers. And now we got a guy that's going to come in, he's going to pitch 2/3. And then we got another guy that's going to come in and pitch another third in an inning. Or an inning and a third. And then another one's going to come in. It's become so selective. It's become so detailed and broken down and layered down with the bullpens. This is just the beginning. Not to mention, the year before, 2018, when Vlad Guerrero got in, and of course, Chipper Don't Call Me Larry Jones, and Jack Morris and Jim Thome and Alan Trammell got in, Trevor Hoffman got in too. So you're starting to see this with the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's no longer a stigma to be a relief pitcher, and it's definitely no longer a stigma to be a designated hitter, as we've seen with the most recent classes here with the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's going to do it for hour number one here of RP3 and Company. We're broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day. Hour number two coming up with a Louisiana wrap-up right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning.
You know, it's my job to do my job as best I can, but to be a good teammate. You know, I've always been great in the quarterback room, helping everybody out.
Former LSU and Saints star wide receiver Devery Henderson.
To get that opportunity, man, and get that call on draft day, seeing that 504 number, it was something else, man. When I got that call, man, it was real humbling, and you know, being able to play for Maine State and be still close to home.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day. And today's coverage from Sunbelt Media Day is brought to you in part by Pete's on Johnston. Guys, the time to book your all-inclusive fantasy football draft party is right now. Go to PetesLafayette.com/fantasy to sign up now. We've got a jam-packed show for you. Hour number one, we covered all things non-Sunbelt. The Open Championship with Shane Lowry, the Irishman, taking home the claret jug. We're talking about LSU's new state-of-the-art locker room, $28 million facility renovation that they just unveiled to the public. Well, so discussed. Houston Astros getting a sweep of the Texas Rangers. And then on top of it, we wrapped up our number one with this year's class into Cooperstown, including Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer Lee Smith. Coming up this hour, head coach of the Raging Cajuns, Billy Napier, will be joining us live right here from Sunbelt Media Day. And then followed by Dr. Brian Maggard, athletic director at UL. We're going to be very Raging Cajun right here in hour number two. But right now, Cody, before we get to all the Raging Cajun news that's fit to talk about, it's time for us to take a trip around the state and beyond with the Louisiana wrap-up.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
Well, Ray, you said it there yourself. It is time for us to take a little trip around the boot and beyond. We've got four stops to make today. Most of them are in Louisiana. There is one outside of the state, but it's not far outside the state at all. We will get there in due time, of course. The first spot that we want to start is the Crescent City, the Big Easy, Ray. We are in New Orleans, and tell me why we're there.
Well, why wouldn't you be here? It's Sunbelt Media Day weekend there, Mr. Schutz. But for our purposes, non-Sunbelt Media Day purposes, we're here for New Orleans Pelicans news. That's right. The Pels announced yesterday the re-signing of Darius Miller, one of the six players left from last year's roster. The Pelicans is closer to the completion of the franchise free agency moves with the official announcement on Sunday that they had re-signed small forward Darius Miller. Five-year NBA vet has reportedly agreed to a two-year deal worth $14.2 million. The second year, though, is not guaranteed. This is what David Griffin, Pelicans executive vice president of basketball ops, had to say in a press release. Quote, Darius has established himself as a versatile, multi-positional shooting threat, and we are elated to be in a position to continue to grow with him. His selfless nature, on and off the floor, makes him an ideal fit for both us in the locker room and in our community. He's a Kentucky alum, and returns to the Pelicans for a third consecutive season and a sixth overall after spending 2 years playing in Germany. Since his return to the Pels, Miller's appeared in all but 13 regular season games, making a total of 18 starts while shooting 38.8% from three-point range and averaging 8 points, about two rebounds, and nearly two assists per game. He averages about 24 and a half minutes per night. So this gives the Pels some needed depth, a veteran presence. He knows exactly what Alvin Gentry wants to do on both sides of the ball, defensive and offensively. He's a grinder. He's a glue guy. He's a good guy to have in the locker room, good veteran presence. So terrific deal for the Pels, locking up, giving themselves some additional depth for this next season and hopefully the season after.
And not just depth, but you mentioned it there, leadership in the locker room, somebody who's maybe been around a little longer than some of these other very young kids that are now part of the New Orleans Pelicans. We'll continue this Louisiana wrap-up now as we head up I-10, and we'll go now to the capital city. We're in Baton Rouge now, RP3. What's going on here?
Oh, we're going to go there because former LSU star Devin White had some sad news, had to pin an emotional post.
Yeah, this is a bummer.
His horse, Daisy May.
Friend of the show.
Died over the weekend. We know how much he actually rode her throughout Tiger Stadium right after the completion of the season. It was viewed to be as his way of saying kind of like goodbye to LSU, right? They were granted him the ability to be able to ride her through the stadium. And so many stories were done on him and his horse. So many stories were done on, you know, his love of being a country boy and his love of having horses and everything like that. And this comes as a bit of a shock. And he announced on social media that she had passed away suddenly over the weekend. He actually pinned it on social media, kind of a love letter to his horse, Daisy May. So, sad news for Devin White. I know some people will be like, well, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just a horse. It's just a pet. Well, look, anytime you lose a pet, it's almost like a member of your family. And if you're a big pet lover, like apparently Devin was and others are, look, man, this is not an easy, it's never an easy thing. So, our condolences go out to the Dick Butkus Award winner from LSU, Devin White, for losing his horse.
Yeah, that was a big bummer for me when I came across this on social media and saw that Daisy May was no longer with us. Gone, never forgotten. Devin White, you know, he'll move on. He'll get himself another horse, and he'll fall in love with this horse as well. But Daisy May, always going to hold a special place in Tiger fan lore, I believe, which, you know, that way, she will be immortalized forever in Tiger fandom. So good for her. Sad moment for Devin White, but hey, you know, it's life will go on, I suppose. As will this Louisiana wrap-up. It continues on now as we leave the capital city of Baton Rouge and head over to Texas. I told you we were going to leave the state for one of these stops. We're not going too far, though. We're just right there in Houston. RP3, why are we in H-Town?
Former LSU wide receiver Jonathan Giles, the man who wore number 7, mm-hmm. which we know in modern LSU lore holds major significance. He did not live up to those expectations. He actually stopped wearing number 7 during the year last year. Things did not work out. He began his career at Texas Tech, transferred to LSU, sat out a year, transferred, was expected to be a huge playmaker, never developed, and now he's going back home. He's from the Houston area. He's going to be playing for Texas Southern. That's where he'll wrap up his collegiate career after he spent a month in the NCAA transfer portal. The 6'1", 186-pound senior will be eligible to play immediately as a grad transfer. He's originally from Missouri City, Texas. And his father, he has a connection to Texas Southern because his father worked at Texas Southern when he was growing up in the video department. So he's familiar with the university. It's close to home. And this will be it. We'll see if Giles can turn things around because his tenure at LSU, where he spent the past two seasons, was lackluster. And the expectations for him, Cody, were immense because when he was at Texas Tech, he led the Red Raiders in receiving back in 2017, 69 catches, nearly 1,200 yards receiving, 13 touchdowns as a slot wide receiver. And Ed Orgeron saw promise in him, even giving him the coveted number 7 jersey. And yet, it never panned out last year. Through the first 5 games, he only had 4 catches for 20 yards, and then he switched to number 12 before the Florida game. So, best of luck to the former Tiger, and hopefully he can end his college career on a high note there at Texas Southern.
Yeah, kind, you know, not surprised to see him leave the program, especially having switched numbers in the middle of the season, and not just performing, like you said, kind of lackluster, but it was obviously lackluster. There were fumbles, and there were just missed plays, kind of blatantly obvious to the most casual fan for Giles, which
the stage looked too big for him. I mean, I'm not saying that to be mean or controversial, but it just appeared that the playing at LSU, and more importantly, with the responsibility of wearing the number 7, I think got into his head and gave him the yips, so to speak, and he could never get past it. He lost his confidence and never got it back, Cody. And by the time other guys already kind of took the spotlight away from him, and it happens just like that. A guy can be as immensely talented and athletically gifted as he is, and then you just off a little bit mentally, your confidence is shaken, boom, that's it.
Yeah, and odds are now that he's transferred out, when he takes the field, he will be one of, if not the most talented guy on the field now in most
of the games he plays. Yes.
So some opportunities here for Giles to shine, maybe, and you never know. This isn't a career detriment for him. You know, he's still got whatever he wants in front of him, he can have. He's got a very high ceiling, that's for sure. But we'll continue.
Don't be surprised. Cody, don't be surprised. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt, but don't be surprised if he goes there to Texas Southern and becomes all SWAC, first team, right, honoree. I mean, he's that talented of a kid. If he just has it right and has the confidence again, and that'll develop through fall camp and everything and getting reps and just kind of getting his mind right. If he gets his mind right, he could be an all-conference type of player there for Texas Southern.
And we shall see as the football season unfolds ahead of us. We've got another stop to make. It's the last stop on this edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up, and we're going to hit a U-turn and head right back from the way we came and finish up in BR. We're in Baton Rouge again, Raymundo. What's up?
Well, our good friend, Jacques Doucet, friend of the program, friend of the station, you know, he had to postpone the Red Rock and Blue celebrity softball game, which helps raise money for his great charitable foundation, because of Hurricane Barry / Tropical Storm Barry. So it finally got played this past weekend. And you know what? The Fighting Matt Moskonas. That's right. Team Moskona.
They didn't win.
Blitzed Team Doucet 24-11.
No!
In the 10th annual, rescheduled Red Rock and Blue celebrity softball game Friday night there held at LSU Tiger Park. But congratulations to Moskona for the victory, but also congratulations to Jacques Doucet for still being able to put on this tremendous event, which helped raise his money for the Red Rock and Blue Foundation that he helped create, and he continues to spearhead. It does tremendous thing for veterans. If you can help out, by all means, do so. But congratulations to Jacques for being able to still keep the game going and having it played. Tremendous effort on his part.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the extra time that Tropical Storm / Hurricane Barry allowed for Team Moskona was the defining edge. If this game was played on time as scheduled, there's no way Matt Moskona gets the win here. I'm going to go out on that limb.
Listen to that. I love it. I love it. Oh, man, we got to hit a break. We're nearing closer and closer here to be talking to head coach Billy Napier of the UL Raging Cajuns. He'll be joining us at 7:32. But up next, we'll be talking a little Raging Cajun football because we're broadcasting live right here from Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. We're broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coming up here in about 10 or 11 minutes, we'll be joined by Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier as we talk a little bit about the upcoming season, expectations, and how he's doing More importantly, how he celebrated his birthday, because his birthday was yesterday. So we'll make sure to ask him all of that coming up at 7:32. That'll be followed with an interview with Director of Athletics Brian Maggard. So it'll be back-to-back Raging Cajun guest here on RP3 and Company. I want to talk a little Raging Cajun football, because late last week, the Sun Belt predictions, preseason predictions, the preseason poll was released by the conference. The league's 10 coaches selected UL to win the West once again. Remember, last year was the inaugural year for the Sun Belt Conference Championship. It was split into East and West divisions. Conference championship game is played at the team with the better record. Whichever division winner has the better record will then host the conference championship game. The conference is not yet to the point where they're going to have a selected site to host its championship game. So the Sun Belt coaches select UL to win the West, App State to win the Eastern Division. The Sun Belt championship game will be played at the site of the divisional team with the best overall conference record, and that game will be held on December the 7th this year. Now, some question marks about the Mountaineers, new coach, even though they do bring back 20 starters, including 2018 Offensive Player of the Year, Zach Thomas, who accounted for 32 total touchdowns last year. There's still some question marks on what this identity of this year's Appalachian State team will be. We have no questions about the identity of the Raging Cajuns. We know what Billy Napier is all about. It's all about accountability. It's all about changing the culture. They've very much promoted the culture of UL since he's arrived. He has just locked up the number one ranked recruiting class in the Sun Belt, the second best class in the state of Louisiana behind LSU. So he's getting the talent. They're running the offense that he wants to run, that he's learned over his years at Clemson, Alabama, and Arizona State. We'll see if they do make the next step, make that step up, so to speak. Now, once again, the Cajuns returned 17 starters from last year's squad, 8 on offense, 6 on defense, 3 on special teams. And Napier's Cajuns finished 2nd in the league in scoring offense at nearly 32 points per game, was 3rd in total offense, averaging 424 yards per contest. And then they got that monstrous three-headed rushing attack with Elijah Mitchell, former ERAF star Trey Regis, and, of course, former Cecilia High star Raymond Calais. They ranked 3rd in the league last year, averaging 218 yards per game. Oh, that's monstrous. Once again, UL has been selected to repeat as Sun Belt Western Division champions. They edged out Arkansas State, their rival, and that series has produced some of the more crazy games that I've ever seen in college football. It's just been absolutely bonkers. UL, Ark State, they're always memorable. Once again, the preseason poll, East Division for the Sun Belt Conference. App State, followed by Troy, then Georgia Southern, Coastal Carolina, and then Georgia State. The Western Division selection, UL, followed closely behind by Arkansas State, ULM, South Alabama, and Texas State. And we're going to talk to more than a few of those coaches that will be facing off against Billy Napier in his squad today. On our program alone, in hour number 3, we're going to be talking to the App State coach, the South Owl coach, as well as the Georgia Southern coach. So we're going to talk to 3 of the coaches that Billy Napier and his team are going to be facing off against this season. The good brother Ben Love in the afternoon. He'll also be broadcasting live right here from Sun Belt Media Day. He'll be talking to Billy Napier. He'll also be talking to the two Raging Cajun representatives that he brought along, the players. And Ben will also be talking to Matt Viator from ULM. And he'll also be talking to the Troy head coach. So we're going to have you covered for Sunbelt Media Day here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Cody, I'm going to throw this on you just because I know you can handle it. Are you ready, sir?
Always.
Let's give the people a new poll question. Very straightforward, simple. In honor of Sunbelt Media Day, we know what the preseason poll is. We know what the preseason predictions are. Let's put it out there and let's see if folks in Acadiana agree with those predictions. Do you feel that UL will win the Sunbelt West Division Championship? Yes or no? We'll throw that up as our poll question. You can go find that at 1037thegame.com on our homepage. It's when you go to the homepage, it's going to be at the bottom on the right. Cody, I'll have that thrown up there shortly, and you can make sure to go vote on it as much as possible. And we'll keep you updated throughout the show on the poll results. We got to hit a break. But when we come back here on RP3 and Company Live from Sunbelt Media Day, we'll be talking to the head man in charge of the Raging Cajun football program, the one and only Billy Napier, will be joining us live. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here live from Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I'm joined now here on Radio Row by the man entering his second year as the head coach of the Raging Cajun football program. He's coming off a tremendous year where they won 7 games, won the Sun Belt Western Division Championship, played for the conference championship, and went to a bowl game. And he's coming off of that by locking up the number one ranked rated recruiting class in the conference and the second highest rated recruiting class in the entire state of Louisiana. It's our privilege to welcome back to the program the one and only head coach, Billy Napier. Coach, how you doing this morning, brother?
Good morning, boss man. Appreciate you having me this morning. You guys doing okay?
Doing well. My first question to you before we get things started, I know your birthday was yesterday. Did you enjoy yourself? Did you celebrate a little much or maybe a little too much? Or did you make sure to kind of be a little bit more responsible since you had all your responsibilities to my friend?
No, business as usual, man. You know, Allie and the kids and I, brunch, church, hooked up with Bam and Deuce and the guys. We headed down to New Orleans. We had the Fido Do last night with the Sun Belt Conference. It was great to catch up with some of our investors and administration and see some of the other coaches and other players. So we're excited about today, and we appreciate you guys covering our team.
Well, appreciate you making the time for us, Coach, and it's our pleasure. You know, take me back a year ago. You know, you're gearing up for this, first time being a head coach, taking over a program, trying to establish this identity. You have to come down here to New Orleans, go through everything that encompasses Media Day. What do you remember most from your first Media Day last year?
Well, I mean, heck, it's all new, you know, and you're chomping at the bit. I think really low expectations last year, you know. I think people didn't expect much of us, you know. I think, which was fine with me as a coach, you know, you want to have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and your players to have the same. But I think this year we see it no differently, you know. We it's a new group of players. Certainly we've added people on our staff. You know, we start over, you know, we repeat that process and try to get better at it. And I think that's where we've probably made the most progress, is just in general redoing everything, even media day to day. I think, you know, we'll do it better. So I think everybody in the organization on our team is working at a much more efficient pace. And I'm excited about this group of players. You got a core group coming back that experienced all those things that you're talking about last year, certainly didn't finish the way we wanted to. So we've had a little bit of an edge in this offseason, and I think that's healthy.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, let's talk a little bit about the finish. I know it was disappointing, the loss to App State in the inaugural Sun Belt Conference Championship game. And then I think probably more disappointing for you was the bowl game against Tulane. What did you take out of that being a first-year head coach? Was it something about the preparation? Was it getting the guys have the right mindset? Was it? Did you do some self-evaluation? What was the process following that disappointing loss to Tulane in the bowl game?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, I was extremely proud of our team, the way we made improvement as a regular season, really going on a run there and winning some critical games and clinching the Western Division, having an opportunity to go to Boone, North Carolina, and play in the championship game, and really competing that game with the intangibles that you would want your team to play with. You know, did we do everything perfect? No, absolutely not. But I think our team was ready to play. We were tough, physical. We played with great effort. Didn't quite execute the way we want to. And that was a really, really competitive, good football team at App had last year. You know, they dominated their bowl game. So a lot of respect for their program and certainly Coach Satterfield moving on to Louisville. Kudos to him. You know, he's a heck of a coach. So, you know, I think the bowl game is a different set of problems, you know, relative to a two-week turnaround to get ready for the bowl game, managing recruiting, managing final exams with our players. And then, you know, maybe a little bit of a letdown because in our players' head, they were coming to the Superdome to play in this New Orleans Bowl. You know, they knew if they won the game, we're coming back to New Orleans and play. And, you know, not that Orlando was a bad bowl game or disappointing for us, but I think in our players, maybe there was a little bit of a letdown there. But I think we did not quite work the way that I would want us to work in that two-week process, you know, getting ready for that game. We didn't quite have the same edge, and I was disappointed with some of the intangibles that we played with in that game. So I think anytime your team doesn't play as well as you think they could or should, you know, as a head coach, you look in the mirror, you reevaluate things, and I've worked really hard on that two-week turnaround because if we play well this year, we're going to have the same scenario next year. So whether that's in New Orleans or Orlando or in Montgomery, whatever the case may be. So, you know, it's something that we worked hard in the off season. We've studied numerous people that go through that two-week transition, and whether that's NFL in the bye week or for the playoffs or the Super Bowl two-week turnaround, and then obviously there's a number of college teams that have done that with the bowl game. So we've worked hard on that, and that's our job as coaches to have the team ready, and I think we've got a better plan this year coming if we get to that situation.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, what's the biggest takeaway for you, biggest lesson learned for you from year one as a head coach here with the Raging Cajuns?
Well, it becomes more and more evident that you got to surround yourself with really good people, you know, and I think that's what gives me some confidence is because I really believe in the group of people that we have, our coaching staff, support staff. I think we've got a lot of young talent in our organization. We've got some wisdom with some veteran coaches, and I think we've got a sound way that we go about our business, you know, our year-round process to get our players ready and make an impact on them as people. I think we did it better so far. Every little phase that we've gone through so far, we're more efficient, more effective. It gets overlooked a little bit sometimes. I think that everybody talks about the players in year two, but really when you start thinking about it, it's everybody. It's the whole organization. It's the coaches. It's the support staff. Everybody knows what to expect. We've defined expectations. We made all the mistakes in year one, and we're better at our job. And I'm no different than any player on our team or member on our staff that's coming back for year two.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, let's talk about the two young men that you decided you picked to bring with you. Why did you pick these two young men to help represent the Raging Cajuns at Sunbelt Media Day today?
Well, they epitomize what we want our football team to be about, you know, and certainly they're players that we want our team to emulate, you know, the young players on our team and the other veteran players. Bam and Deuce have been nothing but class since we got there. You know, both are kind of unsung heroes in a little bit, in my opinion. We could have brought several players. I mean, we've got a whole list of guys. But I think these guys are fifth-year seniors. You know, these are guys that are tremendous leaders on our team. They're vocal. They're great examples with their work ethic, their selflessness. They have discipline, and they're very committed to our overall big picture plan. You know, they've made a huge impact on our team in this offseason. So each has its own little unique story. You know, Deuce is a legacy. He's a former walk-on that we put on scholarship. Played a pretty significant role in our team last year. And is primed to be a tremendous leader for our team this year. You know, Bam's a guy who was injured, didn't go through training camp last year, didn't catch a ball in the first four games of the season, didn't hear one word out of the guy. He just kept working and made a tremendous impact on our team on special teams. He plays our H position, which is kind of does a lot of the dirty work. He plays well without the ball. And, again, as the ball started coming his way, he made tremendous plays throughout the year. So, these guys are what we want out of our football players as players, but more importantly, the type of young men and the type of students that we want as well.
We're talking with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Coach, I have to ask you about your three-headed monster in the backfield. Elijah Mitchell, former ERAF star, local product. Raymond Calais, another local product from Sicilian, of course, Trey Regis. You look through all the preseason publications, all three of those guys are getting recognition from one publication or another. They're so different, but yet together they form a tremendous backfield that averages more than 200 yards per game. How much of an asset is it having those three guys in that backfield once again coming into this coming season?
Well, I think that anytime you rush the ball effectively, it takes a team effort, you know, and I think that it's one of the things that we take pride in our program. We want to be a physical, tough team that plays with relentless effort, and I think rushing the ball is a way to set the tone. It's a mentality, it's a mindset, it's how you practice, it's a year-round plan and how you develop your players. And we ran the ball effectively because we got great play at all positions, you know. I think the offensive line obviously played well around these guys. Tight end group got better and better as the year went. I think our receivers played well without the ball, and our quarterbacks got us in and out of the good plays, made good decisions on a lot of the run-pass option, run-screen options that we have, and a lot of the checks, you know. But ultimately, we've got three talented young men here. You know, all three of these guys could play at about a lot of the schools that I've been at in the past, truth be known. They're all size, speed guys. They've got everything that you would look for, and I think that they're potential pro NFL prospects. So I think you can see that they're well-respected around our league. You know, they're big, physical, and they have finishing speed. When we got all three of these guys healthy, they're dangerous. You know, but it is a position where they get banged up, and having quality depth is key. You know, we rotate these guys to keep them fresh, to keep them healthy. They're some of our better practice players. Oh, you know, I think our players would tell you these guys are intense. They've got urgency throughout practice. They do it the right way. And I think that they've been great examples about how to be a selfless teammate. Never one time have I seen one of these guys pout or complain or, you know, hey, I didn't get my carries, you know. And some of them have stepped up at critical times for us. You know, I know Raymond was a guy in particular that I've been very impressed with. Played his better ball second half of the year. Tremendous spring. If we played today, he'd run out there first, you know. So, and he's a guy that we'll have a definite plan for to get the ball. He's a one-play touchdown guy, and he's got a tremendous attitude to go along with that.
Coach, heading into fall camp, what positions are you going to be having competitions for, open competitions?
Well, we don't have many where we have, you know, there's only a handful of players on our team where there's like, hey, this guy's a definite starter, you know. I think that's one of the things I'm excited about is we do have competition. These guys are going to have to be on top of their game to keep their spot. We've added some young players that I think are talented. But in general, we have more players that are close to playing winning football, you know, across the board. I think we're going to be able to play more players. We've got more quality depth. I think week in, week out, you're going to see competition throughout practice to see who deserves to start the game, who deserves to play more plays. And that's what you want, you know. But we certainly have a core group of players that experienced the things that we did last year. in those lessons. Those things are not going to win us any games this year, but those are lessons that we learned that we can build off of and can create momentum for this year.
We know what Levi Lewis can do. He performed very well for your team last year. Who else is going to be in the mix there at the quarterback spot during fall camp, Coach?
Well, Ave Mangale is a kid that we added. He got to our program in early February, went through spring practice, had a tremendous spring, really performed well in the spring game. He's 100% cleared medically now. His knee's fully recovered. You know, we've done lots of things to kind of help him with his rehab and his injury. And he's back playing football. You know, I think this is a young man who did not play football last year. He had an 18-month recovery from a significant knee injury. And he's back and healthy. So he'll be a contender. You know, he certainly proves that he can be very effective just watching him in practice. Then you've got the young freshman, Clifton McDowell, Chandler Fields. Clifton came in early. Chandler is a local product here from Rummel High that just joined our team on June 1st. He's had a tremendous summer, already created a buzz amongst our players. So we'll have good, healthy competition there. And certainly Levi's the leader in the clubhouse. Has experience, you know, playing as the number two guy and playing in every game last year. So I'm excited about Levi. You know, that's one of the things I've been most impressed with is his improvement, his attitude. Just a relentless worker, man. Sets a standard for the entire team. He's what you want your quarterback position to be. And I think he's ready to take that next step, and I think he'll play at a very high rate. If I was betting, man, I'd bet on Levi Lewis.
Coach, before long, you'll be back here in New Orleans to open up the season against Mississippi State. I'll wrap it up with that. How excited are you for you and your program to start off the season with such a marquee game inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome to kick off the season?
Well, it really is a tremendous opportunity, not only for our football team and our university, but I think for our fans and everybody that cares about the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, you know, to show up and start this season. I think with some of the things that we've been through in this offseason, now more than ever is a time to really unite Cajun Nation. With Tony Robichaux passing away recently, you think about Lynn and the other people that we've been through some difficult times. I think this is going to be a great way to rally the troops to some degree. Let's get together. Let's have a heck of a weekend. Let's compete. I know our football team looks forward to that opportunity. And it's a little bit of a big deal relative to if things go the way we want them to. We were able to win the conference championship game. We'd have an opportunity to come back to finish the year in the New Orleans Bowl. So a lot in front of us, man. A lot of work to do. We're excited about the challenges. We look forward to August 31st. But between now and then, man, a lot of long, hard days. And I'm excited about that. We're going to enjoy this journey.
Coach, best of luck to you and your program. We'll be in touch, and thank you so much for making time out for us today.
Thank you, guys, man. We appreciate the coverage of our team.
That's Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier. Joined us here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. We got to hit a break here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Director of Athletics, Dr. Brian Maggard, will be joining us from UL right here after this. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. We just wrapped up a terrific conversation with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier. And now we're joined here by the director of athletics, the one and only Dr. Brian Maggard. Dr. Maggard, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Good morning. Welcome to New Orleans.
Yes, well, welcome to New Orleans. I want to get right to it. I appreciate you taking a few minutes out for us. How do you feel about your hire of Billy Napier now heading into year two?
Oh, more excited than ever, to be honest with you. You know what he and his staff have accomplished since they arrived is, to me, far outmet expectations, to be honest with you. And the level of excitement and energy around our football program right now is exactly where you want it to be. I'm very, very excited to see the product on the field this year.
When you made the hire and you go through the process and you have all these candidates you have to select, what was it about Billy that you knew this is a guy that's going to establish the right culture, this is a guy that's going to recruit his butt off, and this is a guy who's going to help us win games? What was it about him?
You know, I think when you first sit down with the man, he you can tell he's very thoughtful, very cerebral about the game of football. Yeah. That enticed me a lot. His pedigree was spectacular. He was a process guy. He knew he had a plan and a vision coming in, articulated that very well. And just in that one-on-one session, great communicator, but also extremely easy to talk to and talk with. And so, you know, we knew we were looking for a relentless recruiter, a proven winner, and somebody who, you know, I felt would really prioritize and have a great ability to establish great relationships with our student-athletes. And Billy certainly checked all those boxes since his hire.
We're talking with UL Director of Athletics, Dr. Brian Maggard, here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Dr., you just made another hire, baseball coach, and it just, I'm just going to say, it feels like he would be the guy that Coach Rowe would have signed off on. It just seems fitting that you hired a man whose life and career was saved by Coach Rowe here at UL and have him come back to kind of carry the torch. Talk about your hire as the new baseball coach.
You know, Coach Diggs certainly checked a lot of boxes on the non-baseball side of things, you know, those areas that you were referring to. But at the end of the day, that man can coach as well. He's going to be an excellent baseball coach. He'll continue to develop young men just like Tony Robichaud did. But make no bones about it, he's going to want to win at a high level. His energy and enthusiasm is captivating. When you sit down and talk to the man, you just can't help but get excited and, you know, want to go out and swing a baseball bat. And but it did. To me, it's a great fit. Not only just for now, and that is important. There's no doubt, you know, that given our circumstances, that fit today is as important as ever. But, you know, Matt Diggs could coach Raging Cajuns baseball, you know, any day, in my opinion. And certainly he's going to approach every single day honoring Tony Robichaud. I know that.
You hired Diggs, slam dunk hire, had tremendous success there at Sam Houston State, two NCAA regionals and an NCAA super regional. But he's also connected to the program. When you're going through the process, and you did it fairly quickly, a little over 2 week period, what were some of the things that you heard about him? Because obviously he was already gone by the time you came on board as director of athletics. What were some of the things that you heard from people around the program about him?
You know, probably my first introduction to Matt Diggs, just from a verbal standpoint, was from Tony. I remember him, you know, talking to me about Matt Diggs and, you know, that particularly that 2014 season, I think, when they had a number one ranking, and just always spoke very highly of Matt. And, you know, then certainly other individuals, whether it be amongst the fan base, you know, within our department, you know, you would hear things about Matt Diggs. And so I was aware of his history here, obviously, was aware of his coaching success at Sam Houston. And, you know, when I first had the chance to talk with him on the telephone prior to the meeting, you could just tell right away that everything that people were saying, to include Tony Robichaud, seemed to be absolutely accurate.
We're talking with Dr. Brian Maggard, Director of Athletics for UL, here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Dr. Maggard, I'll just wrap it up with this. You've made the huge announcement about concessions and the game day experience for Cajun Field this season. You have to deal with the tragic sudden loss of an iconic coach in Tony Robichaud, and now you have Media Day. When are you going to have some time to relax and take a vacation? Are you going to try to squeeze that in before the start of the football season?
We are. You know, normally the plan would have been to have this done by now, but a week from Friday, I think Kara and I are going to find a way to get out of town for a few days and just decompress and
recharge those batteries
and put the phone away and just relax.
Well, Dr. Maggard, appreciate you making some time for us. As always, congratulations on the tremendous hire, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Dr. Brian Maggard joining us here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. We got to hit a break. Hour number three coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, though. Having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Radio Row here at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Just wrapped up a tremendous conversation with Raging Cajun head football coach Billy Napier, as well as UL Director of Athletics Brian Maggard to close out hour number two. We're going to keep the conversation going with the coaches as we welcome on the man who is going to be in charge of the program predicted to win and to repeat as Sunbelt Eastern Division champs and to repeat as Sunbelt Conference champions. He is in his first season at the helm of the Mountaineers, but he comes after serving 3 years at NC State out of the ACC as he was the offense coordinator and the QB coach for a record-setting offense there with the Wolfpack. It's our privilege to welcome to the program Aliyah Drinkwitz. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a great morning here in New Orleans. It's an awesome opportunity to get to talk about our great conference and to visit about our strong program, Appalachian State.
Let's talk about that program, one of the best programs when it was at the lower level. It moves up. It seems to have no issue whatsoever going to bowl games, winning a conference championship. What was it about this program that was so appealing for you to leave the Wolfpack and to make this a head coaching destination for you?
Well, I think the foundation of the program laid by Jerry Moore and obviously by Scott Satterfield, you know, made it an attractive opportunity. Also, the roster was left with a lot of players with a lot of experience, and most importantly, there was a quarterback in place that I felt like had the skill sets to be successful for a long time. And so when you evaluate opportunities, you know, there's usually you're either going to a place where you got to completely rebuild and turn it around, and any type of success is measured with a lot of excitement, or you got to go to a place that's winning and you're trying to build and maintain a winning and championship culture. And each one has their own challenges. They're both unique. But as a competitor, I felt like I wanted to measure myself against the best and set those standards high and the expectations high and embrace those.
We're talking with Coach Drinkwitz of Appalachian State here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coach, what do you think about your background, your coaching career is going to be a great fit with the Mountaineers and what they've been able to do in years past?
Well, I think one of the things that allowed me or gave me an opportunity to be involved in the conversation with this job was the fact that I'd been in the Sun Belt before at Arkansas State and had some success and was familiar with this conference, but also my experience at Boise State and being at a place that had high expectations and was winning a lot. And so, you know, combine those two things plus a familiarity with the state of North Carolina with my 3 years at NC State allowed it to be a great fit.
How long ago were you at Ark State?
I was there in 2012 and 2013. Yep.
So you have a familiarity with the Sun Belt. Mm-hmm. It does seem to be quite stacked once again, not only with you guys, but with the Raging Cajuns at UL, Ark State, many people believe are going to bounce back. Plus, you got Troy in your own division there in the East. Talk about the depth of the Sun Belt Conference.
Well, and I think the Georgia Southern won 10 games last year, return a quarterback, very strong on defense. You know, I think they're a team that's going to make a lot of noise and very, very tough to handle with their unique style of play on both the offense and defense side of the ball. You're looking at a conference that had three teams win 10 games last year. Obviously, you know, we got some outstanding coaches. The talent level is at an all-time high. And so it's a unique challenge. In preseason predictions, they don't mean anything. At the end of the day, it's what everybody's going to be able to prove week in and week out. And the one thing I do know about this conference is the fact that we play such high-level opponents, obviously maintaining health in our roster. You know, I think it's unique that we play primarily our non-conference opponents in those first 4 weeks. And so you've got to navigate that and try to maintain that health level of your team as best you can, and then try to gear up for a race. You know, I don't know how everybody else's schedule is, but, you know, we play six games in right around a 5.5 week time frame to end the season. And so it's going to be important for us, you know, to make sure that we do a good job with our strength and conditioning program of maintaining and being healthy throughout the year.
We're talking with Coach Elijah Drinkwitz of Appalachian State here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coach, what are some of the things that you've gotten, that you've put in place to get to know your team better and to kind of earn their respect and vice versa?
Well, I mean, I think there's all kinds of ways to try to earn trust and respect, but the biggest investment that you can have in anybody's life is time. And so as a coaching staff, we've tried to invest time with our players, whether it's using the NCAA's allotted occasional meals, or whether it's in practice, or whether it's working with them throughout the summer because of the NCAA rules of allowable 2 hours a week contact. Whatever it is, we're trying to invest time with our guys and try to build that relationship as quick as possible. We know we're behind the eight ball. You know, we do have good players, but most of the conference, minus Troy, stayed intact. And so those schemes, the offense, defense, and special team schemes, have been in place, and those guys are very comfortable within those schemes with their returning starters. For us, we have players with experience, but they're not, and they're returning starters, but they're not necessarily returning starters within the schemes that we're asking them to do. And so for us, trying to get to speed as quick as we can within the schemes and with what the things that we're asking them to do has been the focus. And so as we combine trying to teach them our schemes, we're also trying to combine getting to know them and build that trust and respect.
You do have the reigning Offensive Player of the Year on your roster in Zach Thomas, who accounted for 32 total touchdowns last year, Coach, and he helped lead the Mountaineers and lead the league in scoring with more than 37 points per game. What does he bring to the table?
Well, the very first thing that Zach is he's tough. And for a quarterback, to me, that's the most valuable characteristic that you can have. It's the ability to be physically and mentally tough no matter what the circumstances are, to have that belief in yourself, that confidence in yourself that you're going to get the job done for your teammates. And Zach has that ability. He also has really good athleticism. He's able to use his feet to help him escape issues. And then he's an accurate passer. You know, he was down at the Manning Passing Academy as a representative of our university and just did an outstanding job. He's very improved and polished in that area. He had great high school coaching by Josh Floyd. And so he's done a really good job, and I've been impressed with his skill set.
We're talking with Coach Elijah Drinkwitz here of Appalachian State from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coach, when you head into fall camp, what are some of the big, you kind of mentioned it, you know, you have some guys that may not have the experience to run the offense or need some more reps. So what are some of the biggest question marks that you're hoping fall camp answers for your ball club?
Well, I think we have some experience. The biggest thing is to add valuable depth. And so we are going to be relying on some true freshmen to provide, you know, significant contributions to us, whether it's in special teams or whether it's providing quality depth throughout the year. We have a competition in the offensive line positions. It's about getting our best five on the field. You know, we've added some graduate transfers on the defensive side of the ball to help replace, you know, departed draft or a guy who declared early for the draft, Clifton Duck. And so we have some competitions at the corner position. Obviously, we've got to replace our dominant nose man last year, Michael Stout. So we're trying to find some of those players. And so for us, it's going to be helping us at the corner position, at the nose position, on the offensive side of the ball. We've got to identify who are the best five offensive linemen and get those guys up to speed as quick as possible.
Coach, one final question. For those who are interested and are intrigued, there's been a lot of buzz on what this team is going to look like, what the identity of this team is going to be under your leadership. what would you tell folks? What can they expect to see from the Mountaineers this coming season under your guidance?
Well, we talk about we have to establish our identity every single day. And what we've done in the past, this is a new team. The 2019 Mountaineers have to come together with the coaching staff, and we've got to create our own identity for this upcoming season. And I know the number one thing that we're going to do is we're going to be a tough football team. We're going to be a tough, physical football team. The second thing we're going to do is we want to be relentless with our effort. We want to be a team that, never quits, never gets up, gives up. And you know, when I think of Appalachian State Mountaineers, whether it was against Michigan in the Big House or whether it was winning the Sun Belt Championship last year, when you turn on the tape, you see a tough physical football team and you see a relentless team that plays with tremendous effort. And those things won't change.
Coach, appreciate you taking some time out for me today. Have fun, and best of luck to you this season.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you all down at on Wednesday at an ESPN.
Appreciate that, Coach. Appreciate that. That's Appalachian State head coach Wyatt Drinkwitz joining us here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. We got to hit a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more Sunbelt Conference football right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome for Sunbelt Media Day. We've had a slew of activity already. You can tell there's more and more media members coming inside here in the media room. Big wide open space here. Radio Row has far more radio stations alongside of it. I was the first, though. Just saying. Just saying, Cody, I was the first. And we had a tremendous conversation with head coach Billy Napier in hour number two of the Raging Cajuns. We also talk with UL Athletic Director Brian Maggard as well. And then we just got done talking to Appalachian State head coach Aliyah Drinkwitz. You know, this is a guy who was a assistant coach coordinator at Arkansas State, so he has some familiarity with the Sun Belt Conference, okay? But he's being a first-time head coach. He's spent the last three seasons at NC State working as an assistant, as a coordinator there. So he's ready to take the step up. He inherits one of the best programs in the country, and we talked about it. He has the reigning offensive player of the year in Zach Thomas coming back. That's a guy who accounted for 32 total touchdowns at the quarterback position. But there are question marks. What kind of identity is this team going to have? Is this going to be the same standard of App State football that we've seen in the past? You know, this is a rich program. When it was a lower 1AA program, remember, it upset Michigan in the Big House. And then it made the jump to the Sun Belt Conference, and it transitioned extremely well, it dominating the conference, winning left and right, bowl games left and right. Conference championship last year when they defeated the Raging Cajuns there in the inaugural Sun Belt Conference championship game. So big shoes to fill there for Coach Drinkwitz there at App State. Not easy to do by any stretch of the imagination. But the talking to him, he seems like he's geared up. He seems like he's ready to take it on. The status of the program, the state of the program, rather, is what appealed to him. That he wanted a program that already has tradition, and he wants to keep it going and wants it to continue. So we'll see. He's got a great player in return. He's got a lot of starters coming back. Okay? They do. They have a ton of starters coming back. But he is going to be a first-year head coach. And first-year's head coach always have some ups and downs. They always have a little bit of a learning curve, so to speak. You heard Billy Napier, the Raging Cajun head football coach, discuss just that earlier on the program there in hour two, where he talked about, you know, there were some things that he had to learn, and there's some things that he and his staff had to learn following the way the season ended with the loss to App State in the Sun Conference championship game, and then turned around and lost to Tulane in the Cure Bowl. So still a lot to learn along the way. Coming up in this hour, we're going to close it strong here from Sunbelt Media Day. We have not one, but two more interviews scheduled with head coaches. We got scheduled South Alabama head coach Steve Campbell is going to be coming up around 8:32, and we'll close out today's show at 8:45, 8:46 with Georgia Southern head coach Chad Lunsford. That's right. Two teams that are going to be playing a role in the Sun Belt Conference, and two teams that's right, UL will be facing this year on the schedule. They'll be facing Georgia Southern on September 28th. They'll be facing South Alabama on November 16th. And both of those games will be on the road this year. And they will be facing Appalachian State on October 9th. That will be a televised game at Cajun Field on a Wednesday, I do believe. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there at App State. That's one of the programs with a new head coach. And look, the Sun Belt is wide open. You know, if you look at the preseason polls, there's going to be some movement. You know, Coastal Carolina went in there last year and was able to defeat UL. Okay. You saw what Georgia Southern did last year. They won a ton of games. They won a ton of games last year. So who's going to do what? I still think it's wide open. I think the coaching change at App State may change things. You know, App State, Troy, Ark State, UL. Could South Alabama upset some folks? Could Georgia Southern once again have another tremendous year? We'll have to see. I think it's wide open. I think it's a lot more wide open than people want to believe. Yes, we know App State is immensely talented. They're their defending conference champion. We know this. That said, I think this conference could be extremely wide open this year. I think it's wide open. I think Georgia Southern is going to be a player. I think App State, Ark State. I think you're going to see an improved South Alabama team this year. Troy's going to be in the mix. They're not going to go anywhere. And, of course, the Raging Cajuns. And then, also, what's going to happen up in Monroe? You know, Matt Viatar has been there for a while. They showed some glimpses last year. Could this be the year that the Warhawks break through? Could this be the year under Matt Viatar where they get the job done and get to a bowl game and maybe upend some other folks? It'd be interesting to see if that is the case, because I do believe it is wide open this year. Yes, once again, App State is the cream of the crop. No doubt about it. Okay? And Troy and App State have been the cream of the crop in the conference for a while. But Georgia Southern's a very good program. UL is trending in the right direction. Great foundation year last year in year one for Billy Napier and company. And then, not to mention, you have five bowl tie-ins. New Orleans Bowl, the Mobile Alabama Bowl, the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl, the Auto Nation Cure Bowl, which UL played in last year, and then the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. So there's going to be five bowl spots on the line. And you have legitimately 7 to 8 teams that are going to be battling for those spots. That's how deep the Sun Belt Conference is this year, without a doubt. App State, Troy, Georgia Southern, UL, South Al, Arkansas State, ULM. ULM could make a huge jump this year under Matt Viatar. South Alabama could be a factor as well. Plenty of depth in the Sun Belt Conference. And we'll be talking about that after we come back from our break here on RP3 and Company as we broadcast live from Sun Belt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome as South Alabama head coach Steve Campbell will be joining us live from Radio Row. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Today's coverage from Sunbelt Media Day is brought to you in part by Pete's on Johnston. Guys, the time to book your all-inclusive fantasy football draft party is now. Go to PetesLafayette.com/fantasy to sign up now. We've been having a tremendous show so far here at Sunbelt Media Day, and it's time now for us to welcome on our next guest. He is entering his second season as the head coach of the Jaguars of South Alabama. He's a longtime college football coach with plenty of experience, and he's looking to turn things around in year two in the team that calls Mobile home. It's our privilege to welcome to the program Steve Campbell. Coach, how you doing this morning?
Good, good. Glad to be here. Good morning to you.
Appreciate you making time out for us. Coach, you got 10 starters returning from last year's squad, 6 on offense, 4 on defense. And, you know, last year you went 3-9 overall. So what are your expectations heading into year number two there with the Jags?
Yeah, you know, our expectations are to be a much improved football team. I thought we had an outstanding offseason. I mean, starting back in January, the guys have been working tremendously hard and had a really good spring, have had a good summer. So each phase of the offseason program, the guys have worked tremendously hard. We'll be a much improved football team. Each year our goals are to compete for and win the Sun Belt Conference Championship. And, you know, hopefully this year we will be able to take that next step and be able to put ourselves into consideration for and in that conversation as the year rolls on for the Sun Belt Conference. And now that we've divided into two halves and are playing, you know, a conference championship game, you know, it's wide open. And, you know, last year we won 2 conference games. If we could make improvement this year and if we've made as much progress as I hope that we have, we can put ourselves into contention to compete for the conference championship. And that's our goal. Last year we were a very inexperienced football team. I don't want to say young because we had some older guys. We just had some guys who hadn't played a whole lot before. We had some fifth and sixth year guys. Neither one of them had played a tremendous amount. This year we start over with, we'll be young at a lot of positions, but I like the youth and the enthusiasm that we've got there. I think, you know, so we're very excited about our opportunities coming up in 2019.
We're talking with South Alabama head coach Steve Campbell right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coach, you know, last year, the 3-9 record is a little deceiving, though, a little bit, because you had some games there that were very close, and that record could have changed greatly. The opener, for example, Louisiana Tech, that's a game that you lost only 30-26. And, you know, there were some lopsided scores in there, too, but there were some other games that were close. The game with the Raging Cajuns, for example, that was a 48-38 game there at Cajun Field.
Yeah.
That was a heck of a ball game, too. So how close are you guys are from going from a team that's losing those kind of closer games against good competition to winning those games?
Yeah, and that's the big deal. I think that I know we'll be a much better football team. Now, have we the leadership, all of those things will be – we got to go out and play a football game. I like the way that our guys have worked. I like the commitment that we put into it. Now it's time to go out and play some games and let's see how much we've been able to close that gap. Last year I thought we got better as the season went on. We started off, you know, we played well against Louisiana Tech, came up short against a really good football team, and then to be quite honest, we didn't play well through the middle stretch of the season. But really, I think starting with, you know, y'all were Louisiana Lafayette, played in the conference championship game, went and won a bowl game, a good football team. I thought we played them very strong for 4 quarters. And then the last game of the year, we played Coastal Carolina, who was playing for bowl eligibility. And we were able to win that game, jumped on them 17-0 right out of the gates. And so we played some of our best football at the end of the season. We were a team that got better as the season went on. This time a year ago, I had one offensive lineman
who had started more than one college football game. This year, I've got five. So, you know, I mean, that was what it was. You know, we were just – we. I had seven offensive linemen in the spring, period. Not seven starters or seven – seven. Two of them were walk-ons. This year, I've got 21. I'm 21 deep on the offensive. Now, all those guys aren't ready to play.
Right.
But the depth of the program has – we've come a long way. Last year, we competed in a lot of football games. We beat everybody who wasn't bowl eligible. We didn't lose any that we weren't that we were picked to win. Now, what we've got to do is take that next step. Let's win the ones we're supposed to win. Then let's go beat some guys that, like you said, in some of those close ball games. And I think we've been able to close that gap.
We're talking with South Alabama head coach Steve Campbell here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day in Southern Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coach, let's talk a little bit about, you said, you know, your offensive line was inexperienced, but you get two real kind of impact players coming back on the defensive line in Tyree Turner and Jordan Beaton. How much of a strength is that D-line and your front seven going to be for your ball club?
Yeah, it needs to be a big-time advantage for us, you know. To me, that's where games are won and lost. And anybody on the O-line and the D-line. And if you've got a D-line that other people have a hard time blocking, you're going to win a bunch of football games. And we've got a chance to be really good up front this year. Tyree Turner, who's with me today at Media Day, is a very talented young man, outstanding defensive lineman kid. Young man has worked tremendously hard to put himself into position to have an outstanding senior year. You mentioned Jordan Beaton, who has got to be probably I don't know who else. He's got to be one of the strongest guys in the nation, definitely in the Sun Belt Conference. He got squats. I mean, he broke up a squat record in high school and does the 225 40 something times. is a freak. Specimen defensive line wise, and then the guy who had the best spring of anybody is Jeffrey Watley on the defensive line. So I like our defensive line crew. Now, that young offensive line who wasn't very good early in the year last year, and they went against those guys daily and got better and better and better. And the last game of the year against Coastal, Trey Minner, who's with us here today, went for over 200 yards rushing. So that offensive line got to go against that defense, and it's made both groups a lot better. So our defensive line definitely needs to be a strength for us. We're counting on them. Well, we've got depth there. And, you know, you mentioned Jordan Beaton. Sean Brown is another three, you know, he's a 320-plus defensive tackle. Nose guard, that's an outstanding football player. So we get Roxell McWilliams, who is a guy that was slated to start for us last year, tore his Achilles during preseason camp. He's back on the defensive line. So that is a position that I like our depth. I like our talent and like our depth there. So that needs to be a strength for us going into this 19 campaign.
We're talking with South Alabama head coach Steve Campbell right here. Live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coach, tell me a little bit about how much is your offense going to be relying on Tra Mentor, your senior running back out of Georgia?
Yeah, Trey is an outstanding football player. And as the season wore on, I realized just how good the young man was. We need to get him the football as many different ways as we can. Does a great job catching the ball out of the backfield, a good job running in between the tackles. But you know, his deal is if we can get him the ball in space, kid was he was an all-conference, all-Sunbelt kickoff returner. He was up at the top of the league in kickoff return. So he is a space guy that can run in between the tackles. We need to make Trey a focal point. We need to find a lot of different ways to get him the football. Kwon Baker is also back at inside receiver. Kwon led the conference in touchdowns last year during the regular season, scored 13 touchdowns, and he's a guy that we need to get the ball to as many different ways as we can. So we've got some weapons coming back that Trey Minner, one of the top rushers in the league coming back, top all-purpose guys at tailback, and then KB at your slot receiver. Was a dangerous weapon for us this past year, and we're counting on him to be a guy to have a great year this year. And they've all worked hard and put themselves into position to have breakout seasons this year.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us, and you handled this like a pro. You've done this these little media sessions once or twice in your career,
yeah,
brother.
Yeah, I have. Enjoy them. All right. Looking forward to the season getting started. Thank you.
Coach, appreciate your time. That is South Alabama head coach Steve Campbell joining us here on Radio Row, live from Sunbelt Media Day. South Alabama will be hosting UL this year on November the 16th there at Ladd Peoples Stadium in Mobile. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation rolling on, and we'll wrap up our number three, our final hour of the day, as we'll be talking with Georgia Southern head coach Chad Lunsford. Will be joining us live right here on Radio Row. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, and it's time to welcome on our final guest of today's show. He is the head football coach of Georgia Southern. They're coming off a tremendous 9-win regular season, which was capped off with a bowl victory to get to win number 10 over Eastern Michigan in the Camellia Bowl. He returned several starters from that team that went 3-6-2 in the Sun Belt Conference. It's our privilege to welcome to the program the one and only head coach Chad Lunsford. Coach, how you doing this morning?
Doing great. Thank y'all for having me today.
Appreciate you making the time out for us. Coach, let's talk a little bit about, you know, last year, 10 wins. That's a great, a terrific season and a bowl victory. What did you learn about your team and about yourself from last year's success?
Well, I think first and foremost, what I learned from our team is anything's possible. You know, 2017, we were 2-10. And then be able to get the turnaround that we did showed that our staff and our players did a tremendous job of buying in and what was needed to do to get us back to where Georgia Southern expects us to be. And so we did a good job of getting back to that spot. And obviously now we got to take it up to another level and make sure we're competing for Sun Belt Championship and competing to continue to make plays in postseason.
You returned 15 starters from last year's 10-win team. Coach, do you feel like you guys have only scratched the surface of what the potential is?
Well, I obviously have an experience, and, you know, we were two new coordinators on each side of the ball last year. You know, guys were feeling their way through things. I do think the things that we do on offense and defense fit our talent that we had there. But now going into this season, I think there's a lot more maybe confidence, comfortableness going into the season as far as what we do on both sides of the ball. And you know, the biggest thing that we as a staff pinpointed, you know, coming out of that bowl game was let's don't get complacent. And I've seen our guys really put a lot of hard work in this offseason, and I think they still have that chip on their shoulder. I don't think that it's one of those things where we got 10 wins and we've arrived type of thing. We do got to get better at being able to play with a bullseye on our back now. We're not sneaking up on anybody. So a lot of things that we can improve on for sure.
We're talking with Georgia Southern head coach Chad Lunsford here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Coach, you're not afraid to playing up in your non-conference schedule. Last year you played Clemson, the eventual national champion. You hung tough with them 38-7. This year you're going to be opening up the year at LSU. What can you learn from your team when you're playing those early season non-conference games against perennial top five, top 10 caliber programs?
Well, I the thing that I do know, and I've been at Georgia Southern for a while, is our guys will always go into those games expecting to win the game. And doesn't mean we will, but, you know, those guys will those guys will go in there and they'll play with everything they got, and they'll give everything they got for Georgia Southern. They'll give everything they got for their brother. And so, you know, our big thing is just go in there and just play our football game, try to be as disciplined as we can be and not beat ourselves, and go in there and give ourselves the best chance to try to pull off an upset. You know, LSU's a great team, and it's going to be a very, very difficult challenge. But obviously our guys are fired up about it, and we look forward to seeing how we stack up.
Coach, talk about the depth of this conference. I mean, last year's a perfect example. You win 10 games, one of the best teams in the conference. You beat App State, the eventual Eastern Division champion and conference champion, and you did so in convincing fashion, 34-14. They were ranked in the top 25 at that time. But also the next week, you lost to ULM, who was fighting and scrapping. Matt Viator is trying to establish a culture there in Monroe. Just talk a lot about the depth that this conference has. It's just not Troy and App State. There's so many good teams, yourself, ULM can be dangerous. South Alabama should be improved this year. Talk a little bit about that, the depth of the South.
Well, I know this. I know that we have to come ready each and every week. You start looking at the watch list, and you see all these great players that we have in this conference, and all the quality coaching. I mean, there's great coaches at each school, and you know, you're sitting there talking about several ULM. I mean, you know, last year we were able to get a big win over App State, and then we didn't respond by coming the next week, but it wasn't because, you know, that we just thought we could go in there and handle business. ULM was a good football team, and they're very well coached. And so, you know, I think our guys learned last year that, you know, each and every week we've got to bring our A game to give ourselves a chance to win. So I can't say enough about the league. I'm very impressed with the Sun Belt.
Coach, talk a little bit about your team. You returned so many starters, but I know there's a player to watch, and that's your quarterback. What can you tell us about the young man?
Shy Wirtz is a guy that, you know, has continued to grow. He started as a true freshman, as a redshirt freshman, and relied a lot on his athleticism that year. You know, and then last year, you know, he got better at his fundamentals. And this year we want to see him take another step forward and be more of the general of the offense and understand the entire offense and understand, you know, what plays that can put us in to be successful. And he's continuing to grow. Very ecstatic to have Shy Wirtz this year and next year. And he's a guy that is definitely a difference maker for us on offense. And you know, the big thing that I do know about him is his work ethic and how he leads the entire football team and not just the offense.
Coach, appreciate you taking some time out speaking with us. I know you got gearing up. You got to be on TV here soon, brother, but appreciate you making the time out for us, and best of luck to you and your program this season.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
That's Georgia Southern head football coach Chad Lunsford joining us here live from Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. Georgia Southern is actually going to be hosting UL this year, September 28th. That is going to be the conference opener for the Raging Cajuns. Tremendous, tremendous show today, live right here inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Reminder, the good brother Ben Love will be broadcasting live as well today from 4 to 6:30 right here on Radio Row at Sunbelt Media Day. He's going to have head coach Billy Napier. He's going to have Raging Cajun players. He's going to have the commissioner of the conference, Keith Gill, and much, much more. So make sure to stay tuned for that. And today's coverage from Sunbelt Media Day is brought to you in part by Pete's on Johnston. Guys, the time to book your all-inclusive fantasy football draft party is right now. Go to PetesLafayette.com/fantasy. I want to thank all of our guests, all the coaches from App State, South Alabama, Georgia Southern, of course, head coach Billy Napier of UL, and athletic director of UL, Dr. Brian Maggard, for joining us here live on Radio Row. Tremendous show. Stay tuned. Check back in with 1037thegame.com throughout the day for some stories from Sunbelt Media Day, and make sure to listen to the good brother Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports Live from 4 to 6:30, as he'll be broadcasting live right here at Sunbelt Media Day. Y'all have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.